This is the Financial Coconut Podcast, Singapore's first personal finance podcast network. I'm your host, Reggie, aka your chief financial coconut. Every Wednesday, you'll be chilling with me and my guests, who are some of the quirkiest, geekiest people we can find on the internet, about how they do money and life. Sit back, relax. We are a few days away from the weekend. Welcome to Chills with TFC.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
So my doctors would tell me that like 99% of them will die. And even if they survive, 99% will be paralyzed in some form or another. So really, in a sense, right, I was a walking miracle from the standpoint. But I think the biggest lesson was really, no, don't do a lot of foolish things. And also life is really so precious.
Welcome to Chills with TFC, where we sit down with the geekiest, quirkiest individuals to learn about how they do money and life. I'm your host, Reggie, aka your chief financial coconut. And today, it's a heavy one, but I am madly in love with today's episode. Why, right? Because in life, more often than not, we go through this preset narrative, right? Which in Singapore is quite clear, right? Like, you study hard, you get a good degree, you get a job, nice HDB, you know, and then you whack baby bonus hard, right? Hopefully, you can retire in peace, right? But sometimes, we see people that, you know, choose a different path, quote-unquote, right? They think different, they do different, and we wonder what happened to them. And it's not always easy to harvest the actual story, right? Without it being packaged into some neat hero journey or like some moral awakening shit, right? So I am very humbled and I appreciate today, right? Because Eugene from Vision Investing is willing to trust me with his story. So today we're going to talk about how his near-death experience changed his outlook of money and life, right? So I hope you find this episode useful, interesting, and yeah, Dr. Eugene is a very interesting guy. So this is Chills with TFC. He changed a bit, quite a bit. There was a period of time he don't talk to any of us. Maybe it's you had a new focus in life or something.
I do.
Like, you're probably one of those people that don't waste time, you know? And you sleep 4 hours. I know Thomas told me you sleep 4 hours. I was like, siao, this guy sleep 4 hours.
Right? I'm trying to sleep 5 hours now.
I'm trying to sleep 5 hours and I was like, no, that's not helping. But it's about perspectives, right?
Yes,
because to some people, it's like, oh, this is not healthy. But maybe to you, you have a different viewpoint, right? So I think that's the discussion today, right? To be more human. So maybe to just kind of like warm up, you know, for people that don't know you, right? You've been on the show for many times. Yes, but for people that don't know you, you know, what do you do? What's your name? Blah, blah, blah. You know, like, who are you? What should I know you as? Yeah.
So you can call me Eugene. So I've been born to a very humble family. I would say average, actually. Average parents.
Humble, very cheesy, bro.
No, but let me tell you how humble it is, right? Okay. So I think we've been staying in a HDB flat. And how humble it was is my parents were probably earning, like, you know, just really average income.
Mm.
And my dad was a habitual gambler since I was young. Just imagine at the time, we had debts of $10,000.
Mm.
The first debt was $10,000. My mom took almost 2 years to repay.
Mm.
That's some significant humbleness in terms of that, right? My mom was probably earning $1,500 salary.
Mm.
Mm. Basically went to the neighborhood primary school. Then, of course, went to ACS, which the school fees were way too high. So went through that. I think ACS as a bit was extremely difficult because I think my first part of my life, you had a lot of rich kids. Coming from one guy from a poor family, it was bullied. And happened at that time also, I was quite fat. So I was very bullied, and actually the first 2 years was almost, thought of committing suicide. And then after that, decided I wanted to change my life a little bit more. I told myself I needed to become better. And I told myself I wanted to study. So first I studied very hard and actually top one of the top students in my class that grade, that year. And I played and I swim and I did more ways than anyone else. And within like the space of 1 year, I made it back to the first team back in year four. That was the first time actually I realized in my entire life that if I actually had worked hard at doing something hard enough, I could actually make it work. So after finish ACS, graduating okay, quite okay grades, went on to Raffles Junior College, which is RJC. And after I went to RJ was just a totally different league. You went there, the guys like, they totally don't have to study at all. And they were just ace exams. And for me, it was like, I needed to study very, very hard. And I struggled actually very, very hard for the first 2 years and plus playing water polo. I told myself, I'm going to make it to the youth team, the national youth team in Singapore. And just trained very hard and made it eventually. The biggest jump was actually from junior college to university or during between two army was that I had trained a couple of years with the water polo team for almost, I think, 6 years, but never made it on the national team to play for the SEA Games. Then came in my final year in my university. I was like, okay, I'm probably at the peak. I think that eventually came back. And to be honest, in that final SEA Games that I played, so I played 07 SEA Games, 2007 SEA Games, and I was the last person to make the team. You can imagine my life was never smooth sailing. It was always a life that I had to push really, really hard and push boundaries. But through a lot of hard work and sheer determination, just to really just push at it to get it. So that's been my entire life. And I realized, oh, okay, that it's actually really possible.
Is there no validation in the pain and the difficulty of the journey?
I mean, I'm just trying to reflect back, maybe even on my childhood. I can tell you like why I went to RJ was that when my dad, you know, when my parents divorced, right, actually said this when I was in ACS, you'll never make it to Raffles. And maybe at some stage, I actually wanted to make it to Raffles to prove a point to him. Mm. Even though actually I was, honestly, I barely scraped through to even make it through, right? Or even graduate. And maybe it's just a point to prove. But I think it's also a point to prove even like from the early days. So like two mottos always stood up to me even in my primary school days, which was from Radin Mas, which was the best, work hard, play hard. And work hard, actually, I think I really embodied that. And I don't know, it's just this worker bee thing. I was like perfectly fine doing stuff. For me, it was never about I'm chasing this something. It's just about the journey and just trying to go towards it. And that for me was just good enough. I never chased more medals. I never chased winning more games, scoring more goals. It was just me trying to be better at every single time. So I was choosing the games that I knew I could fight. And at least with me putting in the effort, I could win.
And that's important, right? Because I always find the like school of hard knocks, you know, like chong ah, go ah, grind story, like too simple, right? So clearly you have also decided what are the things that I can do that potentially have some sort of chance.
You brought a really good point because I think you really have to find a game that you know that first one, you have passion, you like it. Mm. And at least you have some chance of being good at it. Mm. Right. I think that's important. Yeah. And at least if you try to work some hard, you can be better than average and hopefully be at least the top percentile of that. I think that's
thank you.
It's extremely
crucial. But that is essentially choosing the game, right? And I think that's so important. Yeah. But moving down the story, right? And what changed then for you?
Yeah, no, I think just leading that to that, I guess. So after that, started working in finance and banking, right? And then, of course, 2008, summer came and you have the financial crisis.
Mm.
And at that time, no jobs were out there. So Citi was the only bank still hiring for the management associate program, ME program. Yeah, and then after 3 years after that, at that time, my banking career also was like, oh, okay, you'll have a lot of partying, a lot of drinking, a lot of...
Is it a given? Till date, it feels like it's a part of the identity.
It seems to be part of the identity, but I don't...
Then how can I trust bankers?
That's a very good question.
If they're partying all day, drinking my money away, I pay them all these fees, then why should I trust them?
Someone once said, why would you pay someone who takes a subway to office, right? To manage hundreds of millions of dollars and not billions of dollars, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You get your answer.
Yeah. So that means at this point in time, you don't agree with banking or like with the bankers.
I will not get someone from banking to manage my money.
Okay. Why?
The answer basically came from that same very same statement. I think they're not aligned. I think they're doing it the wrong way. Traditional finance teaches it the wrong way. We can of course delve a little bit more into that.
No, not today. Enough already. So Eugene always comes out and talk about these things. Enough. Today is your life story. Exactly. Yes.
So I think more importantly, really, it's I mean, they just do it the wrong way. And I think we've been taught wrongly.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then 3 years in banking, what happened?
So after that, joined JP Morgan. And then in my second year, did something really foolish. I still remember it was on the Christmas Eve about 8 years ago, having drinks at Tanjung Beach Club. Mm. On Christmas Eve.
Lovely place.
Lovely place.
No connection. It's great. Now, once you get there.
This beach club. Yeah, you know, nice. Just have fun. Right. Had too much drinks. Like a lot of drinks. Decided to do something really foolish and stupid, which was to jump and to do a somersault from the ledge of the swimming pool. And you know, a beach club at a swimming pool,
the
swimming pool is not deep.
Yeah.
It's shallow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? Obviously, I'm intoxicated. And then the top of my head hit the bottom of the swimming pool. And I heard a loud thump sound. And then suddenly my neck went soft. I was like, no one touched me. I went to the edge. And I knew something was broken. But thankfully, I could still feel my arms and legs, which means I was not paralyzed. And then the emergency ambulance came. Went to SGH, I remembered. And because it was Christmas, no MRI for 3 days. Because I was not dead yet, you know. I'm not like life critical. So, and
Christmas more important. Christmas more important. So, guy 还没有要死.
Never go to a government hospital when you're about to die. Oh my goodness. Like literally, oh yeah. So the next day, like, thankfully managed to go to Glen Eagles. I did a halo vest in which what happens is that 4 stuff got drilled into my head at the front and at the sides to keep my head in place. Managed to get a private side doctor to do that. Had that on, which is like, this thing probably weighs like 5 to 10 kilograms for the next like 3 to 4 months. For the next 4 months or so. To try to keep it straight such that my joints happen. So what happened was that my very first bone, which is the C1, cervical bone, broke into 2 pieces like this. So after 4 months, right, the back joint and the front is still open. To this very day, the front is still open. So I still have a broken neck actually. That was when I realized that life actually flashes past you in that moment.
No, that you should realize, never drink and jump into the pool.
That was obviously the biggest thing. That's the biggest thing.
So,
parents, please, never let your kids, please do somersault turns on the swimming pool.
No, don't drink and then like, you know, get intoxicated and then jump into the somersault. Yes.
So don't drink near shallow pools. Don't do somersaults.
That's the main lesson. Yes.
That's the biggest lesson.
biggest lesson.
Yes, correct. But I think the biggest lesson was really, don't do a lot of foolish things. And also life, it's really so precious. Let me tell you how serious that was, right? So my doctors would tell me that you know, you're really very lucky that people will get this thing. Like 99% of them will die. And even if they survive, 99% will be paralyzed in some form or another. Like my physiotherapist would tell me, she has never seen anyone with my injury who's still walking with all 4 limbs. Everyone she's treated, because obviously she's a physiotherapist, right, is paralyzed in some form or another. So really, in a sense, right, I was a walking miracle from the standpoint. I was so grateful, because if I had 1 mm more or 1 cm more, right, you know, it could have hit my spinal cord, and that would have happened.
Mm.
Yeah,
and we wouldn't be here.
We wouldn't be here talking. Yeah. We wouldn't be here talking. So that was really the biggest moment in which I realized just like how precious life was.
And how did that change how you do things? Because sounds like before this, you already damn chong, right? Like, you know, I we have some mutual friends, and everybody already say you're very chong already. Right. So you have a brand, you have a reputation out there. This guy is crazy, wake hard, work hard, play hard, you know, very chong. You know, every time I see your Instagram, it's like, why is this guy like traveling everywhere? Then after they tell me, I back already, I just publish later. It's like, okay. Influencer problem. But with all that pretext of like how you do life already, how did this episode change?
I think the biggest shift was, it came from a stretch where I was spending lots of money, right? Not worrying, not really saving a lot.
The JP Morgan private banking kind of...
I mean, the banking in general. I think banking in general.
Yeah.
You could afford to, because you get paid a bit more and then...
How much actually? Can you say how much you are paid?
So like...
Or like in the ballpark?
Like typically entry level for most investment banking analysts now are probably around $8,000.
Okay.
$10,000.
Is there any upside, like commission or something?
I mean, they have bonuses and stuff. So okay. they get paid typically around those ranges and stuff. I think that biggest shift was really moving from figuring out, what do I do with that, right? Hopefully I can save more, right? Rather than just keep spending on experiences and stuff, which was great. But I needed to do more in life. So the biggest shift was actually my wife. My wife actually told me, you know, you spend all your time reading magazines, doing anything with your life. Is this something you can do, right? And that's where I actually, deep down inside, I was like figuring, okay, I'm good at finance. I like stocks. I like companies. So I used to look at it last time. I was doing equity research back then as an internship. So this is something I can do, right? I know I tried FX, because I've been doing FX sales for close to 10 years. And I know I can't be a successful trader trading FX. So that's something that I can know for sure.
But you're good enough to keep your job, lah.
I'm good at doing what I do, lah, I guess, from that standpoint. So from that standpoint, after a while, I realized, okay, what can I do? So I went on the quest of really trying to learn investing. And to do that is to accelerate my learning, right? Rather than read 10 books and try to take 1 year or 2 years and try to figure that out. So I paid a course, was then at the time called MIP, which is under Ken Chi's or 8i program. And it was a 3-day course on value investing. So do that the entire course and then realize, okay, it's not lottery tickets, you know. It's not like, oh, just buy some anyhow, buy something and then hopefully you pray and then that company goes up, right? There's some logic to it. And I think first time value investing actually gave me some sort of inkling towards it. But after a while, I realized, hey, the companies they'll tell you to buy, okay, great companies, very profitable, you know, strong moats, will never go bankrupt type. Like, you give an example of Viacom, you know, like, duopoly, right? You, no matter how everyone got car in Singapore, confirm have to go for car inspection. Every year, it's going to be there. Man. Rain or shine. Recession, no recession, you have to go and inspect your car. They will make money. And then when you go there, everything's very dilapidated, right? So that's why the margin so high, the profit margin so high. Great company. But then when I realized, eh, but their revenues have been flat. So if your revenues are flat, your profits are flat, and most you earn the dividends.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have the stock price. Mm. So which means your returns are probably the dividend yield, and the dividend yield is probably like 3, 4, 5%. Mm. I'm going to make 3, 4, 5%, okay? When something just sparked off, I was like, okay, something is just off. Then I went on a whole crazy thing. It's okay. If ideally you want a growing stock price, the business should be growing revenues,
yes.
The business should be growing profits, and the business should be growing cash flows. That's just the number one rule. So I went the whole of that and I spent 2-3 years trying to figure out that. And then that's got me really into investing and then shift me or really pivoted me or totally from one end to making do with my life. And now I spend lots of time reading annual reports, reading books rather than I guess spending my time doing other life experiences.
And you really believe that this is better?
I really do, actually. That's the biggest thing. I really do. And when I ran the math, it became so scary. It became quite scary. So that's the power of compounding. So to give you some examples, right? I ran the math. Like if you had $1 million, if you put in $10,000 a month, if you can compound it anywhere from 15% to 20% to 25% CAGR after 30 years or so, the end number would be anywhere, I can't remember off the head. It's probably around between 150 to 500 million. Mm. You actually really do not need to plan for retirement planning. Just do what you do. You do that well, right? You can actually get towards that. But it's really not about the money, because after a while you realize, actually, you don't need to spend a lot of money. Like we were just having a discussion before this, right? All my shirts at home are Decathlon t-shirts. I have Decathlon t-shirts of different colors. Black, blue, and white.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Wife was saying, you should wear a t-shirt. Stop wearing shirts on set. It's like, too formal. He's coming, got cuffling, everything. Relax.
Yeah, so I think that was the biggest shift. And I realized, after a while, I cut my expenses so much, end up saving a lot more, and now I'm just investing all of it. And I find that it's not about making money. Making money is what are you putting the money? And that's why sometimes I don't like to put money into bonds, because you put money into bonds or fixed income, it just grows at the interest rates. You're not actually benefiting anything. Mm. I'd rather be investing in people, which I obviously do startup investing, and I do public investing as well. Because when you invest in companies, when the companies grow bigger, they actually benefit companies. So a lot of that becomes very intentional. I'm investing in businesses, I'm investing in people, and these people must be changing and making the world better. Mm. And that became a fundamental shift in my thought process especially over the last 3 years or so. To really say, hey, you need to do more of your money. When last year, I met this guy called Guy Spier. He's quite a famous value investor. And he said this, what does a dead man bring to his grave?
Nothing.
Exactly. You have all the wealth in the world and you can't bring a single cent. Mm. And after a while, you realize what you leave behind is not the legacy in terms of your physical assets, but the legacy of whose lives you have touched, who you have helped, who you have influenced, who you have helped become better.
Wow, we're going there, huh?
Yeah. No, it is mm. It is really that case, you know. Mm. Like I can tell you, like, so what if I left my wife more money, more houses? You know, there's only number of places she can spend on and number of houses she can live in, mm. right? Or more money for anyone else. There's really, ultimately, there's not much. We all know how much we want to, and we can, as long as we're comfortable, that's more than sufficient. Mm-hmm. And that's why I spent, you know, the surplus of my own other savings doing all of that. And that's something that I find very valuable and got me thinking a little bit more on that.
So what changed then? Like in this near-death experience? Okay, because I get that there's some pivot, but I just want you to be a bit clearer on like, maybe sometimes when we recount our past, we were tainted with like how we look at things today, right? It's quite normal, right?
Yep,
like with the optics that we are today, we look at our past, okay, well, blah, 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 right? But how has this near-death experience that you've gone through kind of recalibrate how you look at life and how you look at money?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
first thing, I think in terms of life, life is very fragile. Like, I can tell you, like, I don't do any crazy things anymore. So, like,
sorry.
Yeah.
I know I shouldn't be laughing, but
like, I can tell you, I used to do, like, scuba diving. I used to do, like, skydiving.
Wait, scuba diving is considered crazy now for you because,
for me,
of the pressure.
Because of the pressure. Okay. The pressure. So, no contact sports. I can't even play water polo anymore.
Mm, mm, mm.
So, if, like, how serious is it? Like, if someone hits me or I fall down, I would die on the spot. So I really do and avoid anything that prevents me from getting towards there.
I feel like I don't dare to give you a hug. Just going for, I'm very scared. But yeah. It's like, hey, Eugene, happy birthday. No.
We can still hug.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So I think that was the biggest shift, that really life became so important. And because I really don't know how long I'll live too. So every day became, I needed to become just so meaningful and purposeful in whatever I do. And that's why, even though I have very short amount of time, 24 hours, right? I try to maximize and do more than anyone else. And I think that was just the biggest shift. I wanted to then make sure also everything I would do was also more intentional, that I need to learn how to say no. Because previously, people ask you, you know, they will say, oh, they chill you to go and say something. Just go, right?
Yeah,
say yes.
Yeah, these days you always say no to me. I want to dig a little bit into that whole, like, you cannot do all these things anymore side of things, right? You probably went through a period where you're trying to, like, recalibrate how you look at these things, right? Do you feel like you've been robbed? At that point in time, like, you love to do this thing. And I'm sure many people, they may not be in your situation, but they love to do something. And then at some point, because of something, maybe they have kids or maybe they have, like, aged parents or something, right? Because of some situation, you give up all these. And it's not, like, your own choice in that sense, right?
Yep.
Like, a scenario made you cut back on a lot of the things that matter to you. How do you feel, you know, like it, did something hit you there in the sense of, like, do you feel something in that optics, like you've been robbed something?
I think one should feel sorry for themselves for being that. But the funny thing was, I really never felt that I'm sorry for myself, because when it happened, I was just so upset. Like, why did I do it? Why was I so stupid, right? I think that's the biggest thing. Like, if I had to do it 1,000 times, I would never have done it, right? But that's on hindsight.
Yeah.
Right? But the simple fact was that I did it. And I alone had to be responsible for the repercussions.
No, but this is a post-mortem, right? Like, yeah. After the thing happened, then after many years of going through this, you have calibrated your mindset and you've come to a peaceful position.
I think even for the first 4 months, to be honest, like, when it happened, I remember I was crying for a couple of nights on that, because it was just weak, right? My mom had to fly back from the US to take care of me. My wife, then back then girlfriend, was there constantly taking care of me. And you know, I was just this guy. Even I go out anywhere, I was just a walking gigantic robot, right? And I felt very useless. I felt very, very useless. They had to cook for me. They had to do everything for me. And I felt, as a man, that should never have been the case. And I wanted to just end that.
What does that mean?
I wanted to not continue to be injured, for instance, but I wanted to recover. And I think just trying to focus on that. That's why, even though, like, there was a partial injury, I was like, okay, let's take it off. I need to try to go back to normal life and try to figure out what to do with it. Yeah. And that fundamentally was difficult, but it was this moment where you realize you just got to move on. You got to move on. Right. You can be really sad, but you have to move on.
Yeah. I get it. It's complicated. It's complicated. But then, how does moving on then look like for you at that point in time?
Because after that, I finally recovered, right? Now, you know, my wife had been with me throughout.
Mm.
Proposed to my wife.
Shout out to wife. Shout out to wife. Legit. Really.
Legit. So, I remember going on our honeymoon after, you know, we proposed. I remember this was the case. We had an Airbnb that was 3 flights up. And if you go to Spain, they don't have lifts, right?
Mm.
And I had to carry a 25 kilos luggage, hers and mine each, up 3 flights of stairs. And it's a circular flight of stairs. So I tried to carry the luggage and I couldn't carry. Mm. Imagine, as a man, to carry that 2 luggages, it took me almost 20 minutes and I was breaking out of sweat. And it's for some reason, we were actually renting at a street. They were near a lot, happened to, it was like near La Rambla, which is near a lot of prostitutes and druggies. And it was not the safest street, lah. Let me put it that way. Okay. We had to walk past that street every time to get to Airbnb. So obviously, I don't know what hindsight was. So clearly, we don't try to avoid
it's
saying
okay,
there
are many such scenarios.
It's very similar. So yeah. I think we always went past that street every night. And then obviously, I had to leave on luggage, go there, and she was there watching the luggage. So it's not the most safest bit, right? And I clearly, me not being able to carry up, that was just the pivotal moment. Whereas I was just so weak. I was like, just not. I think that was the part where I just realized I needed to just get myself back up. So fit, basically. That's where I also started doing personal training.
How do you then train?
Before that, I lost all my muscle mass ever since the water polo days for a couple of years. I stopped playing. Then after that, I started going for personal training. I can tell you, when the first time you do your first pull-up, it's amazing. Because I've never done pull-ups for like years. Then my first squat is just amazing. Oh, and that really got me stronger. And I think that was just that pivotal moment of how weak you realize you are. And how much stronger you need to become in order to provide for the people around you. Yeah, so I just had to do that entire change for that.
Do you feel like you have internalized a lot of the, like, you gotta be a man kind of thing?
I guess it's expectations. Societal's expectations of what a husband should be, a man should be.
And you didn't feel like a near-death experience made you want to run counter to that societal expectation. In fact, you ran closer to societal expectation.
It's a very interesting observation.
I'm a pro like at this.
I think it depends, because that wasn't a societal expectation. So I think it's just me knowing and I need to take care of my wife.
Okay.
I think, and that's...
So it's not so much about what society expects of you, but it's just you wanting to, like, on some level, give back to wife.
Yeah.
On some level, right? Because she was there for you.
Because she was there for me,
during your shittiest times, right?
And hence I think I needed to take care of her and do the basic things, right? And to give her, make her feel safe, to make her feel secure, you know, and to be there always, to be able to protect her whenever, you know. And I felt like I just couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what are some things that you think society expects of you, but after this saga, after this incident, you no longer care about?
I think society trains a lot of us to want to be rich.
No, but you are rich in that sense. Like, by a lot of definition.
Correct. So let me try to differentiate.
Yes.
Rich being, you earn a lot of money, you can spend it, but it's not about rich in the sense of the material things. I think that the better word that I would prefer is actually wealthy. Wealthy in a sense that I don't need to live up to society's expectations and to be able to spend the money the way I want and not being able to get someone to say, I'm rich, or to leave impressions, or to make someone think something of me otherwise. I think that's actually quite a revelation in that moment. I no longer needed to get people's validation.
Okay, so what's the difference between validation and reputation then? Like, on one level, you say that you don't care about how people look at you, right? You don't need external validation. On other level, you are someone that I believe protects your reputation. Like, you have a certain, like, rapport that you built, and you are very protective of it. Is it a fair statement?
Fair statement. I think the way the image or should be, as Buffett or Munger says, right, your reputation can be torn in seconds.
Yeah.
And literally, I've seen that happen, literally, right? And I think, like, even the wrong reputation, you can see sometimes with movie stars, even saying the wrong words.
Mm-hmm.
One saying one wrong sentence, the entire career can go totally go down the hill. So I think it's more from that standpoint. So it's not to live up to expectations from that standpoint. It's not to protect a reputation per se, but it's to more make sure that the true me gets reflected of who I am. Is there a need to use that number to show wealth? Because I'm not a person who shows wealth, right? And from that standpoint, wealth is just a number. To be honest, if you have $10 million and you are a billionaire, life doesn't incrementally change a lot more. There's only a number of cars you can buy, number of shoes, number of watches you can have, number of holidays you can go.
Yeah.
Right? So life really dramatically does not shift a lot more. You can buy a big house, but if it's an empty house, what's the point? Right? Yeah. But that's exactly the point. I think more really to really go back down to fundamentally who I am as a person, and then hence to be reflecting truthfully who I am as a person. That's more of what I've always wanted to accomplish from that standpoint. Rather, I guess to let more the genuine side come out and people can see it. Obviously, you know, we want to achieve certain goals, but I think that's always what
I fair, fair, fair. I understand. And to me, in my head, it's not a dissonance. Right? In my head, it's like I have a reputation that I need to protect. At the same time, I don't really need you to validate me as a person. I'm selling the reputation. You know what I'm saying? It's complicated, but yeah, people say I'm selking, like, I have the reputation. Oh, this is a quirky one, crazy one, right? There's a reputation that I keep to it, right? Yeah, okay, interesting. With all that has happened, right? You share a little bit about your money, you know, how you look at it, you reduce your expenses, you know, and you invest, you know, and to you that is like a big part of living in that sense, a big part of your life, you know, investing and creating value and all those kind of words, right? What are some things that you still then hold on to despite the change? Like pre-near death and then after that, you know, there are all these things that you've given up, but some things you've held on to, like what are these things?
I think the biggest two things has always been the two biggest mottos, which is ready to work hard, play hard. And I think to figure that is, so you see me, like you see on your Facebook, right? I can be working like insanely amount of hours to do my stuff. Like recently I was sharing, right? I was doing an investing course for the last 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, yeah.
And I spent almost over 300 hours and I was teaching 7 students. My wife told me, is it worth you spending 300 hours teaching 7 students, right? Is it really worth it, right? And I told her when I was doing it, maybe it felt like I had like, what I actually questioned, why am I doing this? Because obviously she was questioning me, so I had some questioning myself as well, right? But I realized, no, because when you can actually get closer to the truth or that quest as you have, right? Fine tuning. Because when you realize, when you write, you always clarify your thoughts. Mm. And when you're teaching, it's totally a different level. And yes. I never taught before, really, but for like a course for like 6 sessions.
Mm.
And it was really, really difficult because you can't bullshit. You have to be, that's you really,
live feedback.
You really have to have the stuff. And if people don't like it, they will call boo on you, right? And that was so important. And I needed to make sure I deliver and to show that, you know, there is actually a proper way to put it. And after I told her, it's going to be one time, right? I'm going to spend a majority of the time going to do it. And after that, it's going to be more reiterative and, you know, just more updating on the content. And then it's going to be lesser. So it was very painful. It was very, very painful. But it was needed.
And you believe you live for that?
I think humans are humans. There will always be humans that won't, but there will be some can. And, you know, that's, we're not trying to help everyone.
Of course.
You cannot help everyone.
You're working with the people that you would want to work with.
You would want to. Yes. As long as you get closer to it, I think, you know, that's better. So, like you said, spending the amount of time doing all that, right? Was it worth it? And I think that's going back to that, right? It's always working hard. But also playing very hard. So I, like, you know, when I have that finished, 2 days later, I went on for a holiday break.
Yeah. He's always on holiday break. Always. I feel like my procrastination time is his holiday time. You know, like guy is nuts in that sense. And has this always been the case? Or is it a situation of like after, you know, like maybe before that you already work hard, play hard?
I think before COVID, like, we were traveling quite often. Mm-hmm. But just now after COVID, it's lesser. But to be honest, that this was the first holiday we actually, both me and my wife took. The first long holiday both me and my wife took. It's probably the second holiday or third holiday that we took. But the rest were all shorter ones. But I guess it also shifted because, you know, sometimes about working hard, it's about the quest to find out the truth, and the quest to find out the truth involves a lot of perspective, involves a lot of fact finding. And I think that's very important, right? In the finance world, you can come up something and then, oh, that's it. Or what you're taught, use it. But it's about going back, testing back. Is it the case? Is it really actually really the case? Is this correct? Is this what is being taught? Is it correct or not? So when I try to do a lot more fact-based in terms of that. So I think when you do a lot more fact-based, you actually arrive closer to the compasses towards what it actually is. So that was just a beautiful experience that I had. I will still do it. It might be really painful, but I think I'll do it in a heartbeat. And that's just who I am as a person. I realized that, you know, if you do work hard at anything enough, you can really, really get it. After the accident, that became even more ingrained. Yeah.
I can safely say that you are one with limited time. Can I say that? Like, because of the incident, there's so many uncertainties on like what can happen. So your time is relatively limited compared to others, right? Yep. That's why you're more siao, right? Guy sleeps 4 hours, lah. Just saying, okay? To me, it's very siao, right? At 5 hours, I wake up, you want me to interview at Beta Han already. But yes, I get it, right? So for people that are procrastinating, right? I mean, just from your optics, we're not judging people, right? But from the many people that, maybe for everyone else that didn't have a near-death experience, we treasure life, but not as to that level, you know what I mean? So what is something you have that you want to share with them, you know, like how they should do life or how they should spend their time better or something?
I mean, first of all, I think everyone has the right to do what they want. I think that's an essential human right. For me, there will still be no change. I mean, I still do what I do. Because time is so precious. I mean, if I were to see, I mean, I want to be linking more with more like-minded people to do more of the things that I want to do. And I think that's important. There was this quote, right? You're the average of the five closest friends
or
people. I sincerely do. I sincerely do.
I do too.
I sincerely do.
Because I went to multiple different groups and I see the difference.
Right? I can tell you, like, when I first started, your five closest friends are people who are working for others. Now my five closest friends are people who are not working for others. They're working all for their own. You see a major shift. A major shift of the way of the thought process about what they think. People working for others will be complaining about the job, about the work, or they just want to spend the money. People who are working for their own think totally different. Right? Time becomes, I think that's one of the biggest shift for me. So I think it's getting towards what you want to become. Figure that out, right? I spend a lot of time figuring out what's my life mission, my purpose. Figure out what you want. Figure out your ikigai, right? Which is what you love, what you're good at, what the world wants, and what it can pay. Right. I think if you have that and you can do that as a lifelong journey, that actually is the thing that is worth waking up for, really. Really. That's the thing that's worth waking up for every day. And that's so important.
So passion and purpose must have a money dimension to it. Within the ikigai.
You must be, the world must be able to need and the world must be willing to pay for it. And I think that's extremely crucial. For
important, important. Very because important. I think a lot of us, we sometimes live in this like bubble of like, oh, passion. Like, I'm not very passionate about this thing. I've been through that, right? The whole like, you know, is this your passion? You know, like, is this your purpose? You know, blah, blah, blah. But I also read the ikigai, right? And I think the money dimension is what is lacking in a lot of this discussion, right? I mean, in a sense that if you love what you do, it's great, you know, but if you cannot, then financially sustain yourself within the parameter of like this society, then it becomes hard for you to continue doing it. And I think that's a reality rather than a judgment of like, yeah, you know, don't care about passion. Passion not important one. You can cultivate passion or anything. No. It's not about that. It's just realizing there's a money dimension
there is a money dimension to it. I think that's when you can do that, that becomes truly very important. And I think it's about the longevity, right? If you can do what you love, like I can see myself doing what I love until 80, 90 years old. I want to be continued doing that. I think that's the most beautiful thing. If you can keep doing that, that will truly be quite great.
Nice. So you actually plan to 80, 90 years old?
Yeah, I hope to continue to invest the same way I do without any change until I'm 80, 90 years old. And hopefully I can do that for as long as
possible. No, wait, be clear, I'm not cursing you. But it's just more like, because of your near-death experience, in your head, you still live to 80, 90. You know what I mean? Like, because the timeline affects how you do things. Because I have met people that only plan the 60s. Like, well, what about 60? Right? After that, I don't care. Because after I'm going to get so old, I can't do anything. Right? You know, there's a perspective, right? So to them, their life runs out in 30 years. And within these 30 years, they will do all the things that is in their bucket list and all that. Like, you know what I mean, right?
I know what you mean.
And in your head, your plan is 80, 90. Like, you actually believe in that timeline.
I think the way to think about it is, you aim for the moon or aim for the sky, at least you get the stars. And I try to aim for as high as possible and I try to aim towards that. I think that's the goal. Right? I mean, if you aim for 60, then you might not take care of your body. You might not eat well. You might not just live and do funny things and do stupid things and then you live short. I try to take care of my body, take care of my mind, you know. Obviously, I've made a resolution to sleep a bit more.
Yes, please. Four hours is... Cannot live to 81 4 hours.
Yes.
You want to live to 80, you best sleep at least 6.
Intentionally trying to sleep more 5 to 6. I think sleep is very important. You know, the body, the mind. Trying to make sure that it's in a prime proper condition so we can last until my 80s. And that's... Yeah, so I think doing that is just so important.
Nice. So then... What do you live for in that sense?
I live for the time where, you know, I can do what I want with who I want, wherever I want, when I want.
Don't you already have that?
Not fully yet.
Why? Like, I always feel like you really have that, you know? Like, you love your wife, you can do anything you want.
I mean, I guess when I'm fully just investing on my own, you know, that I think that will be the moment that I don't have to work for a job or do fully all that. I think that would be that moment. And it might be, you know, might be sooner than later.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. Hopefully we get to that closer stage. Mm-hmm. But I think it's really that. And I found that to be so important. Like, if you know what you want to do, you get closer to that. that's just easier, straight, and really more straightforward.
Okay. So you don't feel like your purpose needs to be bigger than you or something? Or do you feel like your purpose changed? You know, because for a period of time, I felt like my purpose needs to be bigger than me. Then after a while, I was like, I'm just going to focus myself, right? This is what I want and I'm going to do it, right? Like, so
if I share my life mission with you, right, which is to excite, to empower and to inspire people to grow their businesses, to create long-term sustainable value and to make the world a better place. It's a bigger purpose that is beyond me. It's a bigger purpose that is much larger than that, right? And hopefully that gets to a closer stage standpoint.
Yeah. And you presume that when people have larger, better businesses, the world is a better place.
I think it must be the right kind of businesses led by the right kind of people. Right?
Okay, that's a much more complicated discussion. But you know what I was driving at, right? Yes.
Larger businesses doesn't mean it's good.
Yes.
And of course, there are a lot, right?
Yeah, there's a lot more to discuss. What is happiness to you?
Happiness to me, really, it's fulfillment and purpose.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Meaning?
Define some of these words.
Purpose, obviously I know my purpose, to keep working in it, to keep doing it and hopefully get closer towards that end goal or mission which I want to do. Fulfillment is when you do and then, like for example, if I teach and then when actually some of them actually use it and they become, you know, financially free on their own, they've built up their own, they managed to help their families, help other people, give back, pay forward. That's such a beautiful thing because I think the beautiful thing is that what we do is that if you can help one can help two can help. There's a multiplicative effect of that, right? I think that's just that bigger thing. And I found that fulfillment comes out when people realize, okay, they're getting closer. They actually realize, oh, it means something. Yeah, I think that's just that fulfillment bit, right? And ultimately, happiness just being with my loved ones, with my wife. You know, we can be around the world. We can do the things that we want to do, truly. She does what she does what she loves. I do what I love. You know, we can get around. We have friends, good people like you. We have chats every now and then. That's such a beautiful thing. We have beautiful conversations about thoughts about life, about what we can do better, how we can better this. Just even this simple podcast, right?
Nice. One last question.
Yes.
Is there room in your heart, in your life, right, to have other people that are like as the same level or like of same level of connection as wife? You know what I'm driving at? You know, like not more wives, but like friends or like bros or like people that can come in at the same level and you can be like soulmate. Soulmate. Is soulmate a word? Yeah. That is not wife, okay? Yeah.
I think the good thing about very good friends, you know, is that sometimes you don't need to constantly spend a lot of time with them. Is that after a while, a couple of months, you come back, you can still chat as though you're this great friends, right? And I do have a couple of friends, good friends are like that. And even like some of my investing friends, one or two, right? We don't necessarily chat, or sometimes we could be texting, you know, quite frequently every day or every other day. And we know exactly how we're thinking about stuff. And that's actually quite beautiful. And to have that intellectual conversations and pushing each other, I guess, higher as we move along on different levels. I think that's also a good bit, right?
Yeah.
You know, you see, like when a lot of people grow old, the most important thing is community. You can have all the money in the world, but you have no one to spend it or no one to spend any time with, right? It's a very lonely world. And it's about the people around you, the community, and that ultimately that truly matters. I think being able to have that. So hopefully, you know, you can continue to do that, hopefully to my 80s and my 90s, with a group of people who can live until then. We can enjoy having such intellectual conversations and be doing something at the background, right?
But you went one round to say no, right? Wife is wife. Like, it's more than intellectual. It's the emotional. It's all these things that you have built with her in that sense. Right? She has built with you also. You've gone through so much that you can have great friends, but I just feel like you're one of those people that have found someone that there's just no space for another person in that capacity.
I said this on one of my wedding vows once. If you meet someone and you can see yourself holding her hand, walking in the park, 30 or 40 years down, as you grow old together, and the person betters you every day, that actually tells you that that is the person for you. Because you're seeing a future that that you're being able to spend that life with that person. And that person continues to keep improving you. So if you find that, you know, that person's a keeper. Nice. So my wife is that person. Nice. She continuously pushed me that even though, you know, whenever it's the hardest, she continues to push me from that angle.
Nice. Next time we must bring wife. I bring wife, get a few people in, you know, because sometimes the people in finance, right, I always have this like very like, you know, oh, this is how you should do it, you know, but we all know that mathematically it can be one thing, applied to real life is different. And sometimes the partner is the one that you need to negotiate with against facts, right? And that one is a different discussion. We bring wife, okay, next round. I get a few others. Then we can have that discussion. Thank you. Thank you for your time.